I would like to introduce you to a couple different men. The first man that I'd like to introduce you to is a man named Chip Robertson. Chip is someone that you may not be familiar with yet, but that I think that you are going to end up becoming familiar with. I hope that you will. Here's a little bit about Chip. Chip is the youngest person ever to be appointed to the Supreme Court of Missouri, appointed by John Ashcroft. Is that right? He then became the Chief Justice of that Supreme Court and served there for a period of time. He's now a partner at a law firm in Kansas City, and perhaps most impressive, he's just come on staff here at Highland Park United Methodist Church. That's a pretty big deal there. So Chip has come on board and is going to be helping us with the Mark Craig Leadership Institute and specifically going after more opportunities like this where we can invest in the business leaders in our community. So Chip is going to come now and tell us a little bit about what he's got planned for this MCLI, the Mark Craig Leadership Institute, some of the future endeavors that we're going to be taking. So if you would join me in welcoming Chip Robertson.
Well, it's a treat to be here, and I'm very delighted to see this many of you here, and I know it's Doug Parker that you came to hear, and so I'm not going to take much of your time. I do want to ask this question. What if the real difference is made in the world by those who quietly live out their faith in the marketplace, in the office, in the airlines, in the kitchen, and in the neighborhoods? That's the question we think the answer to is, it absolutely is. And we're put together this Leadership Institute because this church has a terrific heart for leadership. Not only leadership within the church, but leadership in the marketplace. In 2000, there was a survey taken of people in business who were active in their churches, and the question was asked, how many of you heard a sermon, a Sunday school lesson, anything at all from your church about how to conduct yourself in business during the week? And the result of the survey was that the church has completely failed in its ability to reach outside of its own walls into the marketplace. And we're not talking about building Bible studies, and we're not talking about anything else. We're talking about exactly what Francis of Assisi said. Preach the gospel as often as you can, and use words only when it's necessary. How you live and why you live. I was able to go with Paul Rasmussen when Doug invited Simon Sinek in to talk to the American Airlines folks. Simon's, if you know of his name, and I see some heads nodding, is really big on some things, among them getting to why you're doing things. We want to build this Leadership Institute in a way that's going to present you with opportunities that are going to be at all kinds of levels of commitment. You can do a drive-by shooting. You can come for a couple of days and learn something you want to learn about, a specific topic. And then we're going to create an opportunity for 10 to 12, maybe as many as 20 people to spend 9 months, one night a week, working hard on what it means to live out your faith in the marketplace. And we think it's going to be an exciting time. We're going to work with Bob Chapman, who Doug has been working with as well. We're going to work with some other folks that are interested in how the faith work piece fits together. And I'm going to speak to you all next month. I don't know what it'll be about. It might not be about this at all. But I will tell you that I want you all to begin thinking about whether this is of interest to you. Because I can tell you every place where someone has tried to do this, they prosper, their families prosper, their employees prosper, and their businesses prosper. Because when God is there, it cannot fail. I'm excited to be with you. I'm excited to hear Doug. I'm going to give this back to Matt, and he's going to say a little bit more about Doug. But thank you for allowing me to take a few moments of your time this afternoon.
Thanks, Chip. And as Chip alluded to, you'll have the opportunity to hear more from Chip next month because we'll be having another one of these lunches in November, which you'll hear more about via email. But I hope that you'll come back to hear more from Chip. So we're really excited to have Doug Parker here. So Doug, as you know, is currently the CEO of American Airlines. He's been there since late 2013. He came over from U.S. Airways in the merger. Doug is also a member of Highland Park United Methodist Church. He's an HPUMC dad. He's got two kids that have already graduated, and then he has a daughter who's currently in high school and is one of our active leaders in our youth program. I don't hesitate when I say our youth program would not be what it is without her. She's one of those girls that really is leading well in her high school and here at the church. Doug is undertaking an endeavor at American Airlines to really work on the culture. On the culture of the staff, the 120,000 employees, and also on the culture with the way that they interact with customers. I've heard just a little bit from Doug about this, and it's gotten me excited. But even more importantly, I've heard more about what's happening at American from employees and customers than I've heard from Doug. You know, Doug can come up here and say whatever he wants to, right? But the proof is in the pudding, and I'm hearing, and I know that at least a couple of you have already said this to me today, that some of you are hearing also that things are shifting, and that's because of the leadership that that Doug is giving to that company. And I'm excited to hear a little bit about what's going on. So will you join me in welcoming Doug Parker?
Thanks a lot. Thank you all very much. Okay, so, well, that's not what I wanted. I have notes somewhere. I'm flying out later today. It's my boarding pass. I'm sure it'll be on time. Okay, so, well, first off, what I plan to do, I'll talk, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes, and then just get to questions. I'd rather talk about whatever you like to hear about than me going on. I'm going to start by telling you, first off, that this is way outside my comfort zone. I can talk about American Airlines all day long. I would love to. What I'm not so comfortable about is talking about myself and my faith and my journey and all the things that I'm going to talk about because Matt keeps dragging me outside of my comfort zone. The result of that is a story that I'm anxious to tell because anyway, it means a lot to me. And hopefully some of you can get something out of it as well. I want to start by saying this is a story. This isn't a sermon. I am by no means standing in front of you as someone who's trying to tell you I figured it out or have all the answers because I don't. I'm working through this. But it's a journey that I'm excited about. It's a journey that we've begun that I hope we continue on for a long time. And it was started, like I say, really by Matt about a year ago, last summer, when Matt asked me to he was doing a summer series on leadership and asked me to be interviewed by him in Cornerstone on for his final sermon, which was crazy outside my comfort zone. I didn't have any idea why he wanted me to do it or how it would go, but it was anyway. I don't know if anybody else cared, but it was impactful on me as I'll describe. So anyway, a little bit about where I was at that point in time and how I got here. As Matt said, my family came to Dallas 4 years ago as part of a U.S. Airways American Airlines merger. I was the CEO of U.S. Airways and became CEO of American at that time. We moved from Phoenix. I had spent my, kind of since 9/11 career. Where I was CEO of this little airline called America West, then became CEO of this airline called U.S. Airways. I had spent all that time really working to get a really great team of people into a safe harbor. At America West, we had an airline that wasn't going to survive on its own. We needed more scale. That's why we fought so hard for a merger with U.S. Airways. Then we got to a point because some other mergers that had happened that U.S. Airways wasn't going to make it if we didn't figure out a way to get to safe harbor. That was a merger with American. So we fought really hard to get that done. In that series last year, talked about what kind of really prodded me to do that as a conversation with a flight attendant in the back of the airplane where I realized that I was worried about myself because I thought we were going to liquidate at America West shortly after 9/11. I quickly realized, quit thinking about yourself and worry about these people who are counting on you to go figure out a way to keep this airline solvent instead of worrying about your own career. And once I did that, the crazy thing that happened was I stopped worrying about myself. All I worried about was trying to figure out a way to get that team into safe harbor, and my career took off as a result, because by being so motivated to make sure we got those transactions done, I found myself in a position that I wouldn't have been in otherwise. It's a lot easier to give up on yourself than it is to give up on a group of other people, and I just couldn't do that. So we kept fighting, and got to a point where all of a sudden we were here. So having done that, though, I found myself struggling a little bit personally about, okay, what now? You know, if indeed I say to myself, we were doing all this for a bigger cause, not for ourselves, not so much for, responsibility or financial gain, that we're really doing this for a bigger cause. What's the bigger cause now? We've done that. We've now taken, that flight attendant who was in the galley at America West Airlines telling me, you can't let this airline go under because it's the only job I have, only thing I know how to do, and I'm really good at it. She's safe. American Airlines, largest airline in the world. We're not going to go out of business. And by the way, through the merger, we're now really successful. So that's done. Anyway, I found myself thinking, okay, well, having done that, then why am I doing this? Am I really doing it for just because I like the job? Am I just doing it for money? What's the motivation? Anyway, so as I was fighting through all that personally, Matt called me and said, I'd like you to come talk to this as part of the sermon I'm doing. Again, way outside of things that I'm comfortable doing. Which is a big part of this story, by the way. I have learned with the help of Matt and Simon Sinek and others, going outside your comfort zone is a really, really good thing. It's hard to do, but every time you do it, it's generally the right thing to do. So at any rate, I did that at Matt's prodding and found myself talking with, in front of a lot of people about leadership and faith and what it meant, and trying to be very careful not to sound like I had figured it out, because I certainly had not, but also recognizing as I was saying the things I was saying, still struggling to figure out, okay, if you believe all these things, are you really living that, and what indeed should you be doing with American Airlines if that's the way you feel about faith and leadership? So as part of that talk, and again, I apologize, I'm just going to ramble through kind of chronologically how this story goes, because it's noteworthy to me that all this stuff happened about a year ago. By the time I get done with this, at least hopefully you'll know how majorly different we're running American Airlines than we were just a year ago. So in chronological order then, I walk out. We had, in addition to that sermon series, there was a panel on Sunday night that Paul asked me to participate in, that he was on with a couple other people on, I think it was faith and leadership or something like that. So I was on the panel with Paul. As I'm walking out, Paul says to me, "Hey, have you read this book, Everybody Matters, by Bob Chapman?" And I said, "No, but employees keep giving me that book, so maybe I should." I don't need a copy. I've got some. So Paul mentioned that really almost in passing, I started to read it, found it incredibly compelling. Not to describe the whole book if you've read it, what's fascinating about it to me is it's about this guy, again, a friend of Chip's, who has this small private company that produces machinery that produces paper, for example. I mean, they make the machines that make toilet paper. That's how boring this business is. But in this business, they have figured out, but they're a U.S.-based manufacturing company, and they're successful as can be. And they've done it because Bob and his leadership team figured out long ago, he was an accountant by trade. He was all about numbers. He figured out some time ago, and I just need to read this. They came up with a mission statement for their business that says, "We measure success by the way we touch the lives of people." That's the mission statement of this company. This corporation is doing well. They measure their success not by financials, not by profits, not by revenue, not by output. How we touch the lives of people, and the book describes how they do that. So, at any rate, I'd read parts of it, and then I get an email like you all got for this thing, I guess, that says Bob Chapman's come to speak at the church, and it seemed to me, well, I'd like to go see that. So I was in this room. I saw Bob speak here, again, about a year ago. And, you know, I found myself listening to Bob talk. And in particular, I mean, it's impactful in a number of ways. But the story that I remember that stuck with me the most was just the story he tells about a friend of his wedding that he goes to. And I'll paraphrase it quickly. So Bob's story is this. A good friend of his daughter is getting married. So he's sitting there, and he sees his friend give away the bride, his daughter, and he says, you know, who's here to give away this bride? He says, I am. And Bob says, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, that's not what he wants to say. I know him, and what he wants to say, is not, I'm here to give away the bride. What he wants to say is, listen, young man, this girl and my wife and I have raised this girl with values and with love and compassion, and we expect you to honor her the way we have and treat her the way she should be treated. He says it better than that, but that's the point. His point is, you know, this is somebody, I'm turning her over to you, but you better take care of her because we have, and that's what we expect of you. But of course, he didn't say those words. Bob's thinking that's what he wants to say, and then Bob says, and then it hit me. All these people that are working for Bob's company, named Barry Waymiller. All these people that are working for Barry Waymiller are someone's precious child. These are people that have been, they're entrusting us, me, to treat them the way that this guy wants to tell this husband to treat his daughter. And that's a big responsibility. And we should be treating people as, we should be thinking about our team as everyone is someone's precious child. So he told that story, and I'm sitting out, you know, where you are now, listening to it, struggling with, you know, again, what am I really doing right now? I've accomplished this mission of getting people into Safe Harbor, and then it hit me that, well, that's it. You know, it's one thing to have a job and know you have a job, and that was really important, but my gosh, we have people who have a job but aren't excited and engaged, don't go home at the end of the day feeling fulfilled by what they're doing at work because we don't treat them that way. So look, it's one thing to have me sitting there thinking that's really exciting, but it's 120,000 people in the company, and it's a big ship to move. And by the way, it's I don't own the place. Unlike Bob, who owns his own company, you know, we have shareholders that we work for, and I have a lot of other leadership people on the team that I need to get on board. But anyway, I was excited as I left here. And about a month later, it happens, in October of last year, we're having our annual officer offsite, strategic offsite. Our intent is to go off and work with the team about, you know, the leadership attributes we really want to make sure we have in the team going forward and set goals for 2017, et cetera. So we have that offsite set, and it occurs to me, gosh, I wonder if I can get Bob Chapman to come talk to the team, because if he can get the rest of the team as fired up as I am about this, that'd be really helpful. So I send Bob a note. He says, sure. He flies in just for us. An amazing guy, by the way. He doesn't even want any money for this. He just flies in on his own airplane and speaks because he doesn't need any money. So at any rate, so he comes in and speaks to us. And again, same speech that he gave here. He does it well. One of the things that really resonated with me this time, though, as he's talking, he mentions that he's got another colleague of his in the crowd that he runs in that says to him, you know, look, I'm talking about how he's endowed a few scholarships at Notre Dame and how excited he is about that and how he feels so good about what he's doing, you know, helping these kids that otherwise couldn't get an education get a great education, to which Bob says. He claims he said this to the guy. I can't imagine he did, but let's pretend he did. Bob says, that's really great that you're doing that. You should be really proud of that. But how'd you make your money? Basically saying, this is how you make your money matters too. It's really great you're giving some back, but how'd you get it? What did you do in your career? And how did you treat people along the way? And how would the people that worked for you feel about what you did for them? And that really hit me. It's like, wow. Because again, I think a lot of us thought, well, look, you know, business is business. And I go run the company and we're doing it for the shareholders. And yeah, I happen to be good enough at this that people are willing to pay me more than I probably should make. And I'm going to make sure I give that back. And that's what I do. Bob's challenge is different. He's like, no. You're getting paid. How are you making that? What are you doing? What are you doing for the people that are in your care every day? And that was a new challenge. So anyway, that stuck with me. The other thing then, though, so then we're going through the Q&A, and I can tell the team, it's resonating with the team, and they're getting excited about this kind of bit. But everyone's also kind of struggling because it's so outside how we all got in that room, by the way. We all got to be officers of American Airlines, not by figuring out how to take care of the team. We figured out, you know, how to make sure we survived and took care of shareholders and thought near term, not long term. So at any rate, so we're all kind of struggling with that. And eventually I say to him, I said, look, Bob, this all sounds great. But unlike you, I run a public company. And I'm not so sure that if I stand up in front of my board, not to mention, you know, shareholder meeting, and give that kind of speech, that they're going to let me go implement that plan. That doesn't sound like taking care of the shareholders necessarily. And Bob, again, if you saw him, you know this. If you meet him, you'll know it. He has answers to everything, sometimes a little too flippant and a little, you know, but it's, here's my answer. On that one, he said, he stops for a second and goes, yeah, you're going to need to figure out how to do that. And he was right. He's like that's, you know, but he was encouraging. He said, I know you can do it. You know, you got to figure out how to do what's right. But to do what's right in a way that is consistent with, you know, taking care of shareholders. So anyway, like I said, that was about a year ago. He, by the way, watched me present to the team before that, got done with watching me present, completely added to the value of what I presented by saying, look, you're sitting here talking about building the greatest airline in the world. That doesn't mean anything to anybody. You know, what's that mean? I think you should talk about, you know, your mission is to go validate the trust that's been placed in you by your team members. You know, back to the wedding story, they show up and they're trusting in you. You need to validate that trust. And you need to validate the trust also in your customers that they place in you, that the investors place in you. And he was right. So we talk about that now. That's now what we talk about throughout American Airlines. Validate the trust, because Bob Chapman showed up and watched me present for 30 minutes and had a better idea than I did about how to communicate that. And furthermore, what we decided and how we helped in this kind of, you got to figure this out, how to communicate this, what we realized is what we really need to do, the most important of all is validate the trust that our team places in us. If we do that, they'll take care of our customers, that'll take care of our shareholders, and that's what we're here for to do. We are here to validate the trust that's placed in us by our team members. If we do that, they'll take care of our customers, they'll take care of our shareholders, and everyone's in good shape. So that was the first thing that came out of that. The other thing that was supposed to happen in that meeting was we were supposed to go then work together after Bob left on leadership attributes, you know, something that, you know, most of your companies probably have. You know, if you're going to talk about future leaders of the company or current leaders, well, here are the things that are really important. Here are the things we want to measure ourselves on. We hadn't done it since the merger. We wanted to go through and do it. After Bob left, we had a straw man, by the way, that we'd put together, and it didn't make any sense. It was wrong. That's how profound his impact was on the team. We're like, well, this isn't the right list. We need to go back and work on this. And we did, which was a great part of the meeting as well. So also with Bob's product, we came up with a new set of attributes that we are now using around the company in terms of telling leaders what we want them to be and measuring leaders as we talk about promotions. And they're different than we ever had before. They're different than they would have been if we hadn't heard Bob. Anyway, without boring you with every one of them, they start with, I mean, I can rattle them off, but they're caring, collaboration, developing leaders that can do those things, results, of course, and forward thinking. So those are attributes, and those words don't mean a whole lot, I know, but we have a lot more words behind them. They mean a lot to us, and I'm telling you, they wouldn't have been the same. Caring would not have been the first one, I assure you, but it is now. And so anyway, that's, again, I'm only now like 3 months into the story. I'll speed up. So we've developed new attributes. We use those as a team. We then have this leadership conference that Chip talked about. We have 6,000 people at American Airlines that have someone in their care. And we bring them in once a year. We can't get 6,000 people in a room, so we bring them in groups of 1,500, four different sessions. We talk to them in this huge arena. And or a huge ballroom, and we needed a speaker. Amazingly enough, the speaker, I had nothing to do with this, the speaker that the team had already decided would be a great speaker for our team was this guy Simon Sinek, who, it turns out, amazingly enough, when in a lot of his writing, writes about Bob Chapman at Barry Waymiller. They are friends. They're not just friends. They work together on leadership issues. So, and again, this all sounds like coincidence, which makes me think it wasn't coincidence. So Simon's going to show up and talk at our leadership conference. I've got to speak to the leadership conference before that, of course. Going way outside of my comfort zone, I start my talk to the whole team reading Bob's wedding story to our entire leadership team. That's how fast this was moving within our organization. I'd gone from not even, thinking I could say this stuff out loud to telling the whole team a few months later, followed by Simon Sinek standing up. I'll show you a clip later in a minute of Simon, what he said to our team. And everyone's just energized and excited, trying to figure out, how we're going to go do this. Since that time, that's the real challenge, of course. How do you go make this happen? How do we go? What are we going to do? What's it really mean? Particularly for a group of people who are so into metrics, as we are on the airline, and moving metal and things like that. This is much softer than that. How are we going to make sure we do this right? We have, in that time, first off, there's a class that the Simon Sinek and Barry Waymiller people put together called Inspire Like a Leader. It's a 2-day course in leadership. Which a different kind of course than certainly I'd ever been through before. Talking about finding your why, talking about things like empathy and recognition and how to do those things well. Anyway, we've taken our entire leadership team, we took all of our officers through it within a matter of a month. We've taken everyone down to the director level now. We're going to get everyone who manages somebody through that group before the end of next year. That's making a big difference. I talked about the leadership attributes. Again, the first one is caring. What I found was a little anecdote. So we talk about caring, and this is where one word can get this confused very quickly. So we're using these attributes to measure people for promotions and such. And there's someone that we're considering promoting for officer, and his senior vice president is in talking about him and on these attributes, and she has caring as one of his strengths. And I happen to know that, this individual, primarily because of where he worked, didn't have the best relationship with some of our frontline team members. I was confused by that. So you're giving this guy, high marks on caring. Why is that? And she says, his team loves him. They work around the clock, and he goes in with them. He buys them pizza. He's always there, blah, blah, blah. I said, stop. The caring attribute is not that you care about your team. That's fine. That's great. The caring attribute, the first sentence says, we care about our frontline team members. That's who's taking care of our customers. Those are the people that we need to get engaged and excited, and that need to go home feeling fulfilled. That's who I'm talking about. We're not talking about your direct team. We're talking about the frontline team. So we had to make that clear. And at which point, then it quickly comes back with, some of us don't have frontline team members in our care. What are we supposed to do? And again, you got to shift the whole mindset of the group. Look, I don't care if you're in finance or you're a lawyer, and you don't have pilots and flight attendants and mechanics working for you. What you do every day, you should do something to make sure, the things you're doing should be doing something to create an environment that cares for those frontline team members. And I assure you, you do. I'm as far removed from the frontline team as anybody in the organization. But I'm going to make sure every day I'm going to do something that cares for our frontline team members. So I took it upon myself then to start writing the entire officer team a email every day at the end of the day that says, here's something I did today to care for the frontline team. And I send those things every day still. It's been 6 months now. On something I did to care for the frontline team. You guys will be in the note today, by the way. Because, look, talking to a group of people about what we're doing is taking care of our frontline team. If I'm out vocalizing this and committing myself even further to it, that's doing something for our frontline team. I know that's true. And that's the point I want to make to people in the organization. You don't have to actually, go give somebody a slap on the back every day. That's nice if you do. And every day in our jobs, we can do something to make sure we're creating an environment that cares for our frontline team members. And again, that creating the environment piece is important because that's what we're really doing. We don't need to go actually take care of the team every single day, but we are obligated to create an environment that does. So we've been working on that. Like I said, I sent that note. I got a little We have little bracelets we all have with this ridiculous acronym. Indeed, it's not an acronym because it doesn't spell anything. It says CECFTM, that create an environment that cares for our frontline team members. This we didn't have this stuff if I'd have been here a year ago or anything close to it. So anyway, my point on all this is we have a lot more to do, but we are really excited about where we are. And it all started with Matt prodding me out a year ago. And there's much, much more, and we're really excited about where we're headed. We have an opportunity here to really make a difference for our team. All we want to do is give them, create an environment for them where they know that what they do matters, because it does. What airline employees do every day makes an enormous difference in our world. They get people around the world. They make commerce work. They make they allow people to get to reunions. They allow people to see their family. They allow people to see the world. One of our gate agents works four flights a day. There's 600 people that walk past that gate agent, you know, that lives are better off because of her doing her job well. And, you know, four or five of them are going to really need that person's help. That's a good day's work. And we should let them know how important that is and make sure they understand how important it is. We should give them the tools to do it the way they know how to do it. We should make sure they understand they work for a company that cares about them, with leaders that care about them, and that rewards them, so that when they go home, they feel good about what they did. They go home feeling fulfilled for what they did that day. That's our obligation. And if we can do that, they indeed will take care of our customers, who will take care of our shareholders. But that's our obligation. And I feel really good about it. So I'm energized. I'm excited. I know what our mission is now. It's that. And I would, like I say, it's we still have a lot more to do. Those of you who fly the airline know we're not all the way there. And we probably never will be. That's the other thing that's fun about this mission. There's no end game to this one. You know, we can set a goal of getting, you know, all new airplanes in the fleet, and then it's done. You can set a goal of getting to a safe harbor, and then it's done. Setting a goal that says we're going to create an airline that takes care of our frontline team members, we're going to be working on that way past me. So that's neat and exciting. So we have a lot more to do. The other thing I'd note, as I was speaking, it occurs to me, the words we use even from what we were using a year ago are just different words. You know, we don't say employees, we say team members. We don't say management, we say leaders. We don't say span of control, we say span of care. We don't say, you know, we don't say people that work for me, we say people in my care. And that's just happened, by the way. This is not some kind of bring in some people from McKinsey and tell you the right words to use. That language just happens when you do this right. And it's happened to us. So it's an entire attitude flip that we have a lot of work to still do. I'm going to run this clip now from Simon, if I can, if you guys can help me with this. Before you do, I'll just tell you what this is. Again, this is Simon Sinek, again, came and talked to our team. He'd been there, he did four of these. By the time he talked the third day, he realized everything we were doing and how impactful it had the chance to be. So he left us with this kind of challenge.
So you guys have an amazing opportunity, and this is the opportunity you have. So many of the business philosophies that exist today in America are throwbacks from the 80s and 90s, right? Those were boom years, a time of relative peace, where everybody and every company was making money, and companies were looking for ways to make even more money. And so the concept of shareholder supremacy, for example, was a theory proposed in the late 1970s and popularized in the 80s and 90s. It's now standard fare, right? The use of mass layoffs to balance the books did not exist in the United States prior to the 1980s. It did not exist. It was a new idea popularized in the 80s and 90s. It's become so normal now that we don't even talk about how destructive and bad it is to an organization. It's like spending all this time to build up a relationship and then cheating on somebody. It's like, whoa, and you're like really, really sorry, and then you do it again, right? It's like all it does is destroy trust, sometimes irrevocably, and so, or irreparably, I should say. And so we know that those philosophies of how to run a business no longer work. These are no longer boom years. These are no longer times of relative peace. There's great uncertainty in the world today, and what worked then cannot work now. And there is not a large public company who is setting the tone for how business should run, where we prioritize empathy, where we prioritize taking care of our people, and we trust in the process, like exercise. I know if I go to the gym on a regular basis, I'll get into shape. I don't know exactly when. I trust in the process. You trust in the process of parenting. You trust in the process of eating healthy, not knowing exactly when it's going to work, being absolutely confident it will work. This company has a scale, and you impact enough people's lives, both employees and the people you touch, vendors and customers, that you could profoundly change the course of business in America, which means we change it in the world. Okay? If you're up for this challenge, and mark my words, it will be hard and complicated and frustrating, and sometimes you'll wonder why it's worth it. Mark my words, this is not an easy journey, and everyone is not up for this. But if you're kind of like the idea of changing the world for the better, and you can view your job and this company that happens to be an airline, that we're talking about not only changing the airline industry, but we're talking about changing every industry. That people that used to celebrate Jack Welch and GE, who we do not anymore, will in the future celebrate American Airlines for the models of leadership that you taught us, and we now build our businesses based on what you did. And if you can turn it around based on your history, anyone can turn it around. So if you're in, pony up and start taking care of each other.
Now I got to change the whole world. So, I mean, really, it went from, you know, not being sure what in the world I was going to do and whether, and frankly, whether or not, you know, I was done with this airline stuff and go do something else, to now, you know, someone challenged to do that. It's fantastic. First want to tell you, I have by no means view myself as somebody who could change the world, but what I know is what we're doing is important, and we're really excited about it, and Simon's right. I think business can make a huge difference in our world today. And I think business leaders can make a huge difference in our world today. I'm really proud of I talked about all the stuff our people do. One of the really important things they do right now is we connect people. And we fly over borders and walls and stereotypes, and we bring people together at a time that's really important to do. And that makes me feel good about what we do as well. So, look, I it's a journey. We're a year into it. But I can't tell you how profoundly different what I'm telling you today is than it would have been if I had talked to you before a year ago. We are moving at a pace on this stuff that is hard for me to imagine. In one of the notes, I reminded the team that it was just a year ago that we had Bob talk. And all of us were just like, that can't be right. Because the company feels that much differently than it did just a year ago. So what I hope it feels like 2 years from now is profoundly different than it does today, and that we continue on this journey and that we do make a difference. I don't know that we're going to change the world, but we can change the lives of 120,000 people and their families. We can make it so they go home at the end of the day feeling a lot better about themselves and what they did, as they should. Not because of anything other than that's the way they always should have felt, and we haven't made them feel that way, and we should. That's our job. They are indeed all someone's precious child that we should be treating accordingly, and treating them and validating the trust they placed in us. So we're working on it. So at any rate, that's my spiel. More to come. Keep watching us. Keep encouraging me. I would appreciate it. Pray for us. This is a big deal. So we're trying to do what we can, and I appreciate you guys listening. I got 20 minutes or so we're supposed to adjourn. We can adjourn before that if you'd like, but if there's any questions, I'm happy to take them. Yes, sir.
What does your walk look like personally, and how does that affect your leadership?
Question is, what's my walk look like personally, and how does that affect my leadership? Now you're really making this hard on me. I grew up at raised Presbyterian, but we went to church on Easter. My father was a Seventh-day Adventist, raised Seventh-day Adventist, but left the church because in high school he was a really good basketball player and he couldn't play on Friday nights as a Seventh-day Adventist. And my mom's as spiritual as they come, but we didn't spend a lot of time in the church. I married the daughter of a Methodist minister who had an enormous impact on me and my journey. And she's taught me all this stuff, caring for others and living a life of in the teachings of Christ. It's all come from her for the most part. So that certainly made a difference. And again, that's part of what I was struggling with. And what was really somewhat difficult for me when Matt wanted me to talk to the group is, you know, look, I know that's the right thing to do, but if you're going to ask me how I'm doing that at American Airlines right now, you know, it's going to be a lot of, yeah, this is how we try and treat people, but I don't own the company. I got to work for shareholders. We got to make a profit. It always had that but stuff to it. And I like this a lot better. And don't get me wrong, if you're a shareholder of American Airlines, you're better off now than you were the old way. This is going to be better for our shareholders. It just took me all this to figure that out, to stop thinking of the metric being profits and the stock price, instead of the metric being people going home being fulfilled, because that's holding us back. And if we can get them excited and engaged, again, they'll take care of our customers, that'll take care of our stock price. That's a competitive advantage we can have that others won't have. So at any rate, I'm still working process, but that's kind of how I got here. Yes, sir. Yeah, the question for those in the back is, we got a lot of ex-military people. How's this story going over with those individuals? Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'd have to ask them individually. I can't tell the difference, really. I mean, you're right. A lot of our pilots came from the military. But I can tell you what they like is hearing that we care about them and that we're there to take care of them. Again, Simon in particular has done a ton of work for the military. It's where he's learned much of his leadership. That he writes about is the job the military does in teaching leaders. And Leaders Eat Last is one of Simon's books that he wrote about, you know, leaders he saw in the military who always eat last. I can't answer specifically because I just think of it much, and I can't think of the distinction between military people versus those that weren't. But it's being well received within the team. I will tell you this, amongst the front line, you know, they love hearing it, and then what they tell you is, yeah, it sounds good, but we're not there yet. I don't see it every day. But fair enough. That's what we need to hear. We need to get to where it's there every day. So I should be really clear about that. One thing for me to go say, go do this stuff, and Simon's right, this is so dang hard to get done. It just, you know, we, again, myself included, most of our leaders got to where we are by not doing that stuff, not trying to change the world, trying to figure out how you get by in this industry where you don't make any money and you don't have any money and all you're trying to do is survive and everything's real short term. And now to start thinking longer term is really, really difficult. And it's not as easy as just saying it. We still have leadership people that are struggling with this because it's hard for them to let go of how they got there. And so we certainly therefore have a lot of people on the front line who can't really appreciate it yet. What else? Yes?
Josie, I have a lot of very high profile roles. How would you balance your career with your family, your home, and work to be the best dad that you can be present?
Yeah, thanks. First off, this gives me an opportunity to give a shout out to Matt and the team here. When we moved here, my wife had one prayer, which is that we find a youth group for our kids that's as good as the one we had in Arizona. And we found it here, thanks to Matt. So church is a big part of it. You know, we're here almost every Sunday. And the kids are, you know, if we're not here, they're getting themselves up and going themselves because they love it here. So finding the right church certainly is a big part of that. I try really hard to keep it. Anyway, a second part of that is a phenomenal wife who is, you know, one. There were parts along this story of mine where I just, you know, when you're trying to save companies and stuff, where you're just not going to be around for a while. And, she, you know, there are at least two times where she said to me, look, I get it. We're just going to pretend like you're not around. I'm going to be a single mom for the next 3 months. If you're around, that's fantastic. We'd love to have you, but don't be offended if we're doing stuff and not consulting you. And it's like, I mean, what else could you ask for? She's basically saying, I got this, you know. You come back when you're ready. I got this. And she had it. So fortunately, I didn't do that to her very often because I hated hearing that. But a good partner helps. But then, a lot of commitment on my part to make sure, because I care so much about it, as you all do, and why you're here, but a lot of commitment on my part to make sure that I got myself back for ball games and things that really mattered. So anyway, my assistant will tell you the crazy things I end up doing. I have to work for the company. I'm not going to shirk my responsibilities. Sometimes I can't be everywhere. But if I can, I'm going to be, you know, doing, you know, red eyes and all sorts of things to make sure I get back. I have to travel a lot, but I work really hard to make sure those trips are as consolidated as they can be. I don't spend any time when I'm out of town, you know, going golfing or anything like that. And I'm not off on any kind of long conferences or anything. This seems too important to me since I have to travel enough already to, if I'm traveling, it's got to be for the airline. It's got to be not for me, but for the company. And then when I'm here, things a lot, and again, this, forgive me, because I have the luxury now of being able to do these things, and I remember a time I didn't. So, I don't do business dinners in town. If I wanted to, there's somebody who would take me to dinner every night, I think. But, you know, if I'm in town, I'm going to have dinner with my family. If you want to meet with me, again, I'm not going to shirk my responsibilities, but you can come into my office, we can go have lunch. We can meet for breakfast, we meet for coffee, but I'm going to be home for dinner. So things like that. And everybody has to find their own rules, but those are the ones that work for me. Just making sure that, you know, I have a job that requires me to be on call all the time, but that doesn't mean I can't be home. And I got to figure out the way that I can be home as much as I possibly can. Yes, sir. I'm sorry?
3 or 4 months. And you got a record.
Yeah.
So how do you save your marriage?
Okay, thanks. All right.
We like you have three kids.
Yeah.
And we have an 11-year-old daughter and two twin.
And this is your struggle or your wife's struggle?
My struggle.
All right, thank you for sharing that. So if you didn't hear that in the back, which I'm sure you couldn't. The gentleman in front asked about my history with alcohol and shared that he is currently has an addiction, hasn't had a drink in 3 months. But I'm sorry, fair enough. But is working through that and how I work through it. My story is this, highly public. When I was at U.S. Airways, I got arrested for a DUI driving home. Actually thinking I was fine to drive, of course. I was driving people who wanted me to drive because they thought I was the one that should be driving. I'd had one more than I should have. I was speeding. And I got pulled over and was arrested for a DUI at the time that, you know, I was running U.S. Airways. It's highly public. It was really helpful to me. As much as I hate that it happened, what I know is... that it impacted a lot of people's lives in a positive way. What I had to go through had hundreds of people telling me, you know, seeing what you had to go through has affected the way that I now be. This is before Uber and stuff, by the way, you know. But lots of other CEOs and stuff telling me, you know, look, I now behave differently. Because of what you had to do. So I sure wish somebody else was that example and it wasn't me. But again, I accept it for what it is. I made a big mistake and I had to work and I took responsibility for it. And, you know, did what I had to do, spoke about it, made sure people understood, what happened. It wasn't an addiction in my case, but it's a problem. It didn't affect our marriage because, again, it wasn't anything. It wasn't as though alcohol was affecting our marriage. But that sure woke me up. You make changes. I haven't been behind the. I still drink, but I haven't been behind the wheel of a vehicle with anything other than 0.0 alcohol content, and that was 2007. Since then, I just won't have a drink and drive, not one, because I just don't want to get in a fender bender and have somebody say, oh, yeah, he had, you know, 0.02 alcohol content. So I just don't do that. So anyway, I've made changes. I don't know that I can, anyway, I thank you for sharing your story. It's had a big difference on me. It made a big difference, I think, and a lot of other people. So I feel good about that. I wish, like I said, I wish somebody else was the example, but it was me. So be it.
Look at the chairman of the seat, former chairman of
the Herb.
He
has a problem with alcohol. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Herb Kelleher is a really good friend of mine. Yeah, and he drinks a lot of wild turkey, but I don't think he. I don't think Herb's an alcoholic. If he is, he's a highly functional one. What else? Yes, sir. Yeah.
And we don't see them. I don't see them often. So I know training your managers, bring your managers to the program. But is there anything else that you're doing to help reach the 120,000 and push out this kind of mantra to those guys?
Yeah. Thanks. That's the hardest part, by the way. And again, the 120,000, I don't think we need to reach with the mantra. We need to reach the 6,000 that have people in their care. I mean, really, this is about leadership. Our flight attendants and pilots, they don't need to. All they need is to be the ones that feel like they're cared for, and they'll take care of customers. So it's not as hard as getting to 120,000, it's as hard as getting to 6. Really hard, though. So we start again with these, bring them in every year, and this is, they're going to come in next year, and we're going to talk even harder on this message. And we're bringing Simon back, and he's going to have to figure out something new to say, because we're going to be even more focused on this message. So we keep driving in that way. We follow it up, like I said, with leadership classes that we're going to run everybody through. So that's a couple days of leadership for every one of them that we'll take them through. And then it's just everywhere we go. It's, you know, yesterday I spoke to, we have all of our station managers, the people that run every station around the United, these are the U.S. station managers, around the United States were in town yesterday for a meeting they have a couple times a year where they all get together. And we spent the entire afternoon talking about recognition and sharing information amongst themselves about how they figured out how to really do a good job of recognizing people. And that's how they spent the entire afternoon. That never happened before. I used to spend time talking about, you know, how you get your mishandled baggage ratio down by a tenth and who you blame it on. Anyway, the short answer to that is we're still working through that. That's the hardest part. But once it becomes part of the culture and you really make it part of the culture, then the leaders start leading in that regard, and that's where we need to get to. Yes, sir.
You work for a publicly owned company.
Right.
As a board of directors.
Correct.
How would you share and convince your thought process with a board of directors that has that fiduciary responsibility for return to the shareholder?
Thanks. Question again. I work for a public company with shareholders and a board and a fiduciary responsibility. How did I share this? How did I get there? How did I answer Bob's question? You got to figure this out. Look, interesting story. I think I ended up coming up with was this. We were investing billions and billions of dollars in our product. Hopefully you all have noticed. New airplane every 4 days replacing an old airplane. Lie-flat seats internationally. Wi-Fi is coming, you know, across the entire fleet. Admirals clubs that are, you know, industry, they're world-class, particularly international. All this, billions of dollars are put in the product for our customers. And what I'd said to the board was, look, and if we do that, though, and we don't get this team who still doesn't really trust us, if we don't get them engaged and excited about being here and taking care of our customers, arguably, at best, that money is suboptimized. At worst, it's wasted. But at best, we're not going to get everything we can out of it. So we should really work on this. That's where I started. Basically, this is a necessary condition. We got to get them. We got to transform this culture, because if we don't, we're going to waste money. To our board's credit, and this is what's really fascinating about this stuff. So that's where we were kind of like, this is how we're going to get this through. And we told them all the stuff we're doing. It's just an enormous amount of work that's going on around this, creating an environment that cares for our team stuff. And we, you know, head of HR share it. Our board ended up coming back to us at our last meeting saying, look, we think you guys are stopping yourself short on this goal. We think you can make culture a competitive advantage. We think you can get this. We think you guys are doing such good stuff here, and there's so much upside. It's not just a necessary condition to realizing the return on investment on the capital that we're going to put in front. You can actually get an investment on return on this. You can get to a point, you know, if we go put in lie-flat seats international, if we go put in Wi-Fi, so is Delta, so is United, because business customers are too important to all of us that we're not going to let a product advantage happen. But if we go spend years getting our culture transformed and they don't, good luck good luck matching that. And that's what our board said to us. So anyway, it's been an extremely pleasant surprise to me. I started out, again, less than a year ago saying, gosh, I don't know how I'm going to explain this to my board, to now our board telling me, get on that. That's going to be something that really makes a difference. And you guys are onto something. So that's what happened. And we had an investor day last week, and this is all I talked about. In front of our investors, in front of the media, investor media day, all I talked about almost entirely was this. Because this is what we're working on. And this is where we need people to know we're working on. And it's working. Anyway, I'm glad you asked because it's been fascinating to me. I was struggling with it. And I didn't need to. People get it. Anything else? We got a couple minutes left. All right, well, look, thank you all very, very much for your time. I really appreciate it. And thanks again.